Okay, hello, and welcome everybody to another episode of Spotlight. Today's guest, we have the famous friendly Lee from Georgia as our guest. Doing the interview will be Steve Pellet. Our two recorders today are Dennis and Becky. I'd like to thank all four of you for your part in making this a great event. And might as well get started. It's all yours, Steve.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael, for that introduction, and yes, indeed, we're here again to do another Spotlight, and as Michael said, this week we're going to be talking to Lee in Georgia, and Lee's been on for the people longer than me. Lee was one of the very, very first people I ever spoke to on for the people all those years ago. Lee, thanks for agreeing to be interviewed, and kind of begin by asking you to tell us where you were born, if you wouldn't mind.
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia.
In Atlanta, in Georgia. That's a big city, isn't it? That's quite a big place in Georgia, isn't it?
That's the capital of Georgia, and I have been out of Georgia since, except on vacation.
And tell me a little bit about your mum and dad. What did your dad do for a living?
Dad worked, he sold heavy road equipment. And mother was a substitute teacher. Then later, the audio, visual, and textbook coordinator for Roosevelt High School.
Oh, that sounds interesting. So she used to, record material for people then?
No, she was the one that was in charge of all the textbooks for the school, and she was in charge of the film strip recorders, the videotape player. She would send them out to the different rooms, and then her boys would come pick them up.
Oh, okay, yes, Lee, I understand. She was a technician at the school, and your dad did heavy road equipment. Was that trucks and stuff like that? Did he help to maintain those?
He was a salesman. He sold bulldozers, just things that they use for construction of roads.
And brothers and sisters? Have you got any brothers and sisters?
No, I'm the only one. My cousin and I grew up together, and we were more like brothers than we were cousins.
Okay, and I know you live with him now. We'll come on to that a little bit later in the interview. Can you remember being a small child and the sort of things you used to do when you were a kid?
Oh, yes. I used to have a Fletcher. And the street that was in front of my grandmother's house, it was a hill. It was kind of a hill. And I would get on my Fletcher and roll and go down that hill and just have a good time. I'd play with my Fletcher most of the day. Plus, there was two kids, one next door to me, and one house further down. And we always played together.
And you were still living in Atlanta at this time, really?
Right, we was living in the house with my grandmother and grandfather.
Have you always had a problem with your eyesight, or could you see when you were a small child, or have you always had difficulties with your sight?
I always had problems with my sight. Up until about 10 years ago, my vision was 20/200. My pupil was pie-shaped. In other words, and the doctor once told me that for me to see is like for anyone is like other people that are trying to look through a keyhole.
So you've always had a problem with your eyesight then, and did the other kids in the area accept you okay? You know, did you feel that you were different, or did they treat you pretty much like all the other people?
They treated me fine, great. In fact, especially Pete, you know, Pete, he was great with me. We had a ball together.
That's good to know. And I think you told me when we were having our little chat the other day that round about the age of 5 you developed epilepsy. Have I got that rightly?
Right. I used to have to go to Eggleston Children's Hospital because every time I'd have epilepsy, it would be at night, and I would go to bed, and next thing I know, I was at Eggleston Hospital, and they'd keep me there for a night, and then they'd release me the next day.
Oh, that must have been very frightening as a small child. Did this happen to you very often? Did that happen a lot, that you found yourself in hospital?
Yes, until they got the medication dosage right.
And this was, this must have been over 60 years ago. I don't suppose you remember the sort of treatment you used to have. Do you remember what sort of things they used to do with you, you know, to treat epilepsy? Was it all drugs, or did they use any other form of treatment?
Just drugs. I've had more EEGs than I can count.
I suppose, you know, back 60 years ago, the treatment was probably very different. Now, do you think over the years the treatment's improved? I mean, I take it you're still taking medication.
I sure am. I went to a neurosurgeon about 10 years ago, and I had stabilized when I was 17, and I asked the doctor 10 years ago, I said, what would happen if you took me off of my drugs? He said, being on there this long, one thing would happen, you might have a stroke. Or you might have grand mal seizures. I only had petit mal or petit mals. And he just said that it would just put you back to ground one, so I'm not going to even tamper with your medicines.
I should think that's extremely good advice, Lee. And if you don't mind me asking, how are you these days? I mean, do you still have these seizures, or have they got it pretty well under control now through the modern medication?
Okay, it's under control. I haven't had a seizure since I was 17. Of course, after that, I started having vertigo. But, of course, I'm taking medicine for that, too.
Oh, wow. Well, at least they've managed to control the epilepsy, and that's really great that you haven't really had any major problems for all those years. Let me take you back a little bit now to when you first started school. If you've always had a sight problem, you must have had to go to school. Did you go to school locally, or was it residential school?
Locally. There was one school I went to. I mean, I would go to one school. There was one room for partial seeing, one room for the blind, and then the rest of the school was for the rest of the school, for the rest of the children. But when I went to high school, we were mixed in with the rest of them. The only difference is when we had tests, we would have a sight teacher come to the school, and I would go into the dining room, and she would give me the test. She would read off the test, and I would give her the, and I would tell her the answer. She would write it down, and then we would go back into the class and submit the then give it to the teacher.
Okay, that sounds a pretty clever way of doing it. Were you able to see enough to be able to use print or not?
My books was large print. It was specially in other words, I had 4 volumes to one book to their one book.
Okay, so it's really large print, and you were able to cope with that. Okay. What were your favorite things to do at school? What did you enjoy?
I loved band, because orchestra. I played drums in both. And I liked sports. Of course, I didn't participate. I just liked going to them.
Okay, I'm interested in the band side of it. What sort of music did you play?
We was a marching band. We played the intermissions at the football games.
Oh, okay. So it was like you'll have to forgive me, Lee, because I'm over here in the UK. I'm not sure what would be happening there. Would it be like marches and things like that? Is that what you would be playing? You know, marches so that to entertain the people before and after the match.
Right. We would make letters. We'd go into different figures, and then we would play different songs. And then when we would march off the band off the field, the drums would be. I'm marking cadence.
Okay, you really enjoyed that. I love drums myself. I'd love to have been a drummer. So I can understand the pleasure you get, or you did get from that. And it's a great feeling, isn't it, with the drums, and you can really pound away.
That's true. Even now, when I hear music, I find myself tapping my leg.
Yeah. I can well imagine. Okay, so you did all that at school, and you enjoyed your music, obviously, and so on. And then the time came for you to leave school altogether. And what did you do after leaving school, Lee?
After I left high school, I had gone for a couple of years I forgot to tell you this earlier. I went a couple of years to a different school. I was going for punch card to learn that. I learned to type the punch card, but I never did do the verifier very well, they just said it's no use in me trying it. And that was the end of that.
Yeah, okay. And after that, after the computer punch card episode, what did you do then?
I went to Goodwill Industries. That's where people donate clothes, electrics, TVs, shoes, and housewares, and we take them, and what we could sell, we send in to the different stores. What we couldn't sell, we took to as is, or as we call it, salvage. That's where dealers would come and buy the stuff that we couldn't sell.
Oh, that sounds good. Goodwill Industries, is that like a nationwide organisation, or is it just in Georgia? Are there lots of these places all over the states, or is it just local?
Nationwide. It was formed by one man, he was a missionary. And they wanted, and his church wanted him to be a missionary in the United States. So he decided what he was going to do was to make a mission of, or make a come up with a company that would help the handicapped, to help the community.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's really good. So you weren't there, and you were sorting this stuff. What actually happened to it after it had been sorted? I'm still a little bit unsure as to what happened to it then. Was it sold on to other organizations after you'd sorted it?
After we sorted it, it would go to the... when I'm on the sorting line, it would go... We would put it in different bins. Hardware, softwares, TV, radios, tape recorders, shoes, belts, and so on, would go to the different departments to be priced. After they were priced, they would go to the shipping department where they would be shipped out to the different different stores in the city.
Okay, yeah, I understand. I'm with you now. So did you work in various departments for the Goodwill Industries, or did you stick to one particular job?
I did almost everything. I did not work in electrics. I was not in housekeeping. I was not in the office, and I did not drive a truck, but I did everything else.
Okay. Yeah, maybe a truck driver wouldn't have gone down too well with your eyesight problem. But, okay, tell me, let's pick one of these departments at random. Tell me about the hanging department. What did you do in there?
In hanging, everything would come in on, we'd get them on racks from the sorting belt. I would put them on rails so the taggers could tag them. And then after they tagged them, I would put them back on another rack to be taken to the shipping department. Then stuff that would come back from the stores, we'd have to take the old tags off so they could reprice them.
Which would you say was your favorite job out of all the various things that you did there? What did you like the best?
Baler.
Aha, tell me about that.
That was part of salvage. Stuff that came back for the third time, we would put them on the back of the belt, and it would feed them up to the baler. And when I was a baler assistant, and when we would fill up the baler, we would have to close it, and it would shut down. Then we would open the front and the back, and I would run the baling wire through it, and the baler operator would band off the wire, and then I would put a chain on the back, and then when we raised the top up, the bale would just flip out, and then we would put it on the scales to be weighed. And then the forklift driver would pick it up and put it on the stack.
Ah, sounds good. And you really enjoyed doing that. You said earlier on that other disabled people worked there, other people with disabilities worked with you. What sort of disabilities did the other people have?
We had several who was crippled. A lot of them had emotional problems. We had three people who were both deaf and blind. They were in the housekeeping. And there was one lady who, she ran the snack bar. She had a problem with her legs also. And one of our truck drivers had a problem, but I did not really find out what it was. But almost everybody at Goodwill had one problem of some kind.
And did you all get along well together? You know, were you all good friends, and did you help each other where you could?
We sure did. It was just like for the people, we were one big family.
How big was it, Lee? Was it like a huge place, or you know, like a big factory, or was it like a huge warehouse? What sort of size was it?
It was like a big warehouse. We always told everybody that would come in to tour the plant that it was 5 degrees hotter in the plant than it is outside in the summer, and 5 degrees colder in the plant than it is in the wintertime. And somebody asked, they said, "Don't you have air conditioning?" We said, "Yes, don't you have air conditioning and heat?" We said, "Yeah, we got air conditioning in the winter and heat in the summer."
Well, that's quite a difference in temperature, isn't it? That's quite a lot of temperature difference there. How did you actually get to work, Lee? Did they supply transport for you?
My father took me to work.
Oh, I see. So your dad took you to work. What about the other people? If it was necessary, could they have provided you transport?
Yes, they have in Atlanta they had what they called the L bus. That was a bus that had wheelchair lift access, but they didn't have that many. You'd have to call for them. But we had several people that used it. In fact, one year we was in the heart of Atlanta at one time, and we had a problem. There was a fire in the metal conduit in the wiring, and it started in the basement, and it went all the way up to the third floor. And the head of Goodwill asked an electrician what could he do to fix the problem. He said, "The only thing I can do is to strip every single strand of wire out of this building and rewire it." And he gave him a figure, and Mr. Jumbo said, "I can build a new building for less than that," and that's what he did.
Oh, wow. So what did you do during that time then, when the building was out of action?
As they built the building, we still worked in the old building. And in fact, several of the departments moved over as they were finishing the rest of the building. I moved over with the shoe department while they were still working on the hanging department. I could see them working while I was in my department.
Ah, so eventually you had a really brand new building then. Was it better than the old one when they redone it?
Right. Everything was on one floor rather than having three floors in a basement and an elevator that was so slow that you could walk up the steps and walk up to the third floor before the elevator got up to the second floor.
Great. Oh, I'm pleased you got your brand new building. And how long did you work for Goodwill Industries?
30 years.
Wow. Would you say you enjoyed it? Did you enjoy those 30 years?
I sure did, but at the end they started changing. Everything was quit. We disbanded the sorting department. They started sorting everything in trailers and sending it directly to the store. And that's when I figured, with all these changes, it's time for me to retire.
So you retired. What year was that? When did you give up work?
1995.
And after 30 years of, you know, going and meeting all these people every day and doing these things that you enjoyed doing, did you find it strange not going?
In a way, yes, but I didn't miss having to go out to the store, Goodwill, in all kinds of weather.
Yeah, I bet you didn't like it too much in the winter. So, after you finished with Goodwill Industries, you had to find something to keep yourself occupied, and what did you do for leisure, you know, after you'd left work?
When I left work, I had a Commodore computer. I had that for 25 years until I could no longer see the screen, and then I got my IBM. And my computer is my mainstay.
Oh, the old Commodore computers. I think a lot of people started with Commodores back mid to late 90s. What sort of thing were you doing with the first computer you had?
I was on bulletin board services. I would go to different ones, but there was one I went to. It was called Max Clubhouse. And I was the co-sys up of it.
Okay, well, you'll have to explain to me a little bit about bulletin boards, because I know a little bit about it, but not a great deal. Was it like, a little bit like text messaging?
Right. It was, there's places where I forgot how you call it, but you could post messages on the computer, on the server itself, and then people would reply, and then they would have some games on there.
Ah, okay, so you could actually make friends, could you? You know, you could, like, get friends, although you weren't actually speaking to them like we're talking now, but you could actually make friends using this system, could you?
Right.
What sort of games were you playing?
Text adventure games.
Oh, I know. Is that the sort of thing where it says you are standing in a road, you can go north, south, east, and west, what next? Is that the sort of thing?
Right.
Oh, I've played some of those myself. I haven't got the patience, I'm afraid. I get very impatient with those, Lee, but you enjoyed that, obviously.
Oh, yes.
I think you also told me when we were chatting the other day that you also like reading books, don't you?
I sure do. I get books on tape from the Library for the Blind. I like Dale Brown. I like adventure books.
Yeah, well, eventually, of course, you got a better computer. What made you decide to get a Windows computer after the Commodore? What spurred you on to do that?
I needed something that I wouldn't have to worry about using the monitor. So I called Ward's Computer, that is one, it's a computer place out this way, and they said, I went to Arkenstone. I told them about my problem. They said, we got a computer. It's called an Arkin clone. We will bundle it with JAWS for Windows. That's the first time I heard of JAWS. An open book. And I had that for a good a long time until the keyboard messed up, the hard drive messed up, then I had to go locally to get one, and I've got the one I'm using now.
And it's very different, of course. How on earth did you learn to use it? Because then they're quite complicated things, aren't they, for anybody? So who taught you to use it?
I learned the basics with my Commodore. The difference with the IBM and the Commodore is the function keys are on the right side rather than the top, and the Commodore does not have a numpad on it.
Okay, but you basically had a little bit of tuition, did you, from the company?
Right.
And then you picked it up yourself?
Yes, sir.
Oh, very good. What sort of a difference did it make to you having a scanner? You know, were you able to read stuff with your scanner? What sort of things did you read with the scanner?
I could read anything that was typewritten. I can put books on the scanners, or anytime someone would send me a letter that was typed, I would put that on the scanner. Plus, Jack would a while back would send me something that he would get on the computer, and I would scan it and read it.
And it's marvelous, isn't it? I remember when we had our scanner. It's fantastic when you can read your own letters.
It sure is.
And then, I suppose eventually, you discovered For the People. How did you first learn about For the People?
From another place, but that when I first came on For the People was the happiest time, because I met some of the best and wonderfulest, the most wonderful people ever on the computer in For the People.
Yeah, that's great. I know. I think we all feel pretty much the same, Lee. It is marvelous, and you're now a valuable member of Jennifer's moderator team, and you host Swap Shop for the people. You were doing it earlier today. Can you just tell us a little bit more about what For the People means to you?
It's another family to me. Plus, Jennifer is a wonderful lady. She has helped me more than I can say. I wasn't feeling well. I was sick. I had the flu. I was off the computer. I was in the living room of the house. I was sitting on the couch with Mother, and I heard the phone ring. Mother picked it up, and she said, "It's for you." I said, "Hello," and it was Jennifer. She asked me, she said, "What?" She said, "What's the matter? You haven't been online?" I said, "I'm not feeling well." And next day, I had some flowers from her.
Oh, that's absolutely lovely. That's fantastic, Lee. And I bet that made you feel, you know, a whole lot better. That's really, well, as I say, it just goes to show what friends we all are. And I know we all feel the same. Everybody in this room feels exactly the same. That's why we're here, and that's why we're here day after day, week after week, year after year. It's really special. Now, when do people come on For the People? When you first meet people for the first time, yourself, you always say a little slogan to them, don't you? Just remind us what you always say to new members.
Welcome to For the People, where we're not just disoriented forces, we're a family. And welcome to the family of For the People.
That's it, and that sums it up pretty well, doesn't it, Lee?
That's it. That's the way I feel.
Tell us a little bit about your home life, and because I think you no longer live in Atlanta now. You moved from Atlanta, haven't you? So tell us a little bit about where you're living at the present time.
I now live in Conyers, Georgia. That's in Rottdale County. I live on a major thoroughfare. That's the reason I don't go out to get the mail or anything, because this street is just too congested for me to even bother with getting out. Plus, we got a Publix grocery store right across the street from us, and that adds to it.
Oh, so it's very different to living in the big city of Atlanta when you were younger. And I think you've still got Mum with you, haven't you?
Right. Mum is 88 years old, and she walks on a walker. There's things she cannot do for herself. She can't go into the kitchen and get her glass of Coca-Cola and bring it back to the sitting room. I had to do that for her because she couldn't hold on to the glass and the walker at the same time.
Okay, so you give her a hand. And that's nice, isn't it, that, you know, to think that when you were a little boy, having all that problem with your eyesight and your epilepsy, she looked after you, and now, all these years later, you're helping to look after her, and that's like completing the circle, isn't it? Isn't that good?
That's the way I feel. Plus, now I make up my bed, then I make up hers.
Yeah, and I think you told me that you now you actually live with your cousin and his wife, don't you? I think I've got that right. You and your mum live with your cousin, Jack.
We sure do. They added on two rooms to their house for us.
Did you have to move farly from where you were living, you know, to Jack and his wife?
About a 5 minutes drive. I had lost my father in 1999. Because he had a lung cancer, but he was taking chemo and radiation therapy for it, and all of a sudden his blood oxygen level went down so much that we had to put him in the hospital. And when he was in the hospital, he had pneumonia, and the drugs he was taking combined, he just couldn't survive it.
Oh, it's very sad. So after your dad passed on, did they ask you to come and live with them? Is that how it happened, that you went to live with your cousin Jack and his wife? Cousin Jack's wife's name, Lillian.
And they have two kids who are adults, Matt and Mandy. Mandy has two young boys, and they had moved out before we came here, and there was two rooms. Two bedrooms clear. So the reason we added two more bedrooms onto it, one for Jack and Lee, and then another one for Lillian. Mother has a bedroom, I have a bedroom, and the third one is our sitting room.
That sounds nicely. You're obviously a very, very close, loving family, and you all obviously, you know, get on really, really well, and you all support each other by the sound of it.
That's true. And anytime I want to go anywhere, Jack takes me. In fact, when we were kids, Jack and I grew up together as brothers. And on the weekend, when we would go out bowling or go any or go to a show, we'd go by Jack's house and pick him up.
Okay, and you're still very close, obviously, even to this day, which is very, very nice to hear. And it's great that you got such support from the family, and it's really nice. Okay, Lee, I'm just gonna drop this on you now. No thinking. I want you to tell me the answer to these questions as quick as you can. Just a bit of fun. Your favorite, let me see, your favorite food?
Lasagna.
Your favorite drink?
Coca-Cola.
Your favorite type of music?
Country Western.
Your favorite time of the year?
Fall and spring.
Oh, I'll let you have that. I'll let you have two, being as it's you. Your favorite author?
Dale Brown.
And finally, your favorite TV station?
WSB, or that's ABC.
Okay, Lee, thanks a million for chatting to us. That's the end of my bit, so to speak, the official interview. I'm sure one or two people would like to say one or two things to you in the remaining time. So thanks very much indeed, Lee. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. And we've spoken nearly every day for 3.5 years, I should think. I don't think there's many days go by that we don't say hello to each other. And I really enjoy always finding you on the peeps. And it's a great pleasure to chat to you today. Okay, guys, over to you. Have you got any questions for Mr. Lee from Georgia?
Lee, I want to thank you for sharing yourself with us. I said you do nothing but radiate goodness. I can see why you're such a good person. When I'm in your presence, I feel warm, comfortable, not threatened at all, because there's no pretense about you. What you are is reality. And thanks for being you.
Thank you, Vinny. And thank all of you for being my friends. That's more than anything that I can think of.
No, Lee, thank you for being our friend, because you are a very dear, special person. And I thank you personally for being my friend.
Yeah, I want to give you a great big thank you from myself, from the board of directors. You've been such a faithful and steadfast moderator from the beginning, one of the very first of the crew. So dependable. I can always count on you to get your hours in and to do the right thing in rooms, even when it's tough. And you are just one of the kindest folks I know. That's what we call you, the For the People greeting Hallmark card. We love you, Lee, and thank you for everything you've done for us.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah, that was a wonderful interview. Lee and Steve, I really enjoyed it, and of course I just felt like I knew everything you were going to say, because we feel like we know you so well, Lee, and it's an honor for me to know you, and I really appreciate all that you've done for the people, and for being my friend.
Oh, we have to thank you for helping keep Jerry Kidd in line too.
I may say something I ain't supposed to. I joke him, but he's a friend.
Yeah, one thing I could say about the interview is even though I only caught part of it, it sounded like there was some real family closeness, family ties involved with this.
We are. And Jack will help me in anything I need to be have done. And this thing, sometimes if my computer messes up and I can't see, of course I couldn't see the screen and Jaws would shut down, I'd go, and Jack was here, I'd say, Jack, will you tell me what's on this Titan picking screen? And then he'd tell me, then he'd get the mouse and fix it for me.
Okay, any more actual questions or comments for Lee and for the recorders?
Well, Lee, my friend, I want to thank you for coming on Spotlight. You did an excellent job, as did you, Steve. And I also want to thank our recorders, Becky and Dennis, for doing an excellent job. Great job, Lee, and I'm glad to call you a friend.
Becky, Dennis, I also want to thank you.
Lee from Georgia, you have been found guilty. The charge is consorting with the people on FTP. Do you plead innocent or guilty?
That's a good one, Mike.
I thought he was taking the fifth there for a minute. Yeah, great interview. Thank you, everyone. And a great big thanks to Michael Cunningham. He's new at Coordinating Spotlight.